Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You are listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, buddy, welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by Michael.
Hello, everybody. I hope you made it through Valentine's Day. I hope all expectations were met, if there were any. I hope that the candy was good. Good company. Possibly a good date. Maybe a taco casa.
Is that where you guys went?
No, okay. But on Valentine's Day, we actually, the three of us, our three-year-old too, we went out. We were seeking for the least Valentine's Day eatery that you could think of, and we settled on Firehouse Subs. And it was perfect because I think there were more employees than there were patrons. So it was just what we wanted for the three of us. But I did take my wife out the next night on Saturday.
Yeah, we stayed in Friday night and made dinner, and then we didn't really do anything Saturday special. Like our big dinner was Friday night. I made that, steaks and lobster. I made compound butter. I made butter, and then I turned it into compound butter.
What is this compound butter?
It's just like garlic and herbs that you put into softened butter, and then you kind of
roll it up,
roll it and re-chill it.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty good. I told Samantha, I was like, I don't know if the effort was worth the payout. Like it wasn't bad.
Well, sure.
I just don't think I would do it, like expend that effort again.
Yeah. Maybe just stick with regular butter and put a little garlic powder on the top of it or something.
Well, the steak was seasoned. Anyways.
We're already off the rails. 2 minutes in.
Find us on Twitter, everybody, at 23personnel. If you want to follow the show, you can follow me at Punts Suck and Michael at Michael underscore LBK.
806.
Although the majority of our social media happenings going on right now is on the Instagram.com. If you like have to hit up the website, just search 23 Personnel Podcast. You can follow the show there, follow stories that we publish there. And then if you want to pick up some 23 Personnel Podcast merchandise, some shirts, hoodies, long sleeve, all kinds of great stuff, teespring.com, search for 23 Personnel.
Yeah, I got to hit you up on that. We'll talk about this afterwards. I may need to get some,
here comes Steve.
Some gear.
Man, I thought that was muted. Great.
Well, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. We're about to talk about some basketball, and I was trying to get ready and prepared, and my computer was not muted.
You're just too excited to talk about this Oklahoma State game.
I am so excited to get through the basketball section of this week's podcast.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You want to go ahead and fire it up, or should we tease what we've got going on?
Let's go ahead and so we're going to talk about basketball, obviously, talk about the one game that we had between our episodes, Oklahoma State, and then preview the next two games tomorrow night Wednesday night versus Kansas State, and then Saturday afternoon, evening at Iowa State. More Jet Duffy football news. Central Michigan paper published another piece. It doesn't help that
no.
Texas Tech is, anyways,
head in the sand.
There's a new coaching hire on the football staff. And then we're going to recap the baseball opening weekend, probably a lot more in depth than you would expect us to go through for 23 Personnel Podcast. You know, we obviously would recommend you guys listen to the Dinger Derby podcast for all of your Texas Tech baseball content hankerings. Keith Patrick's got you all kinds of connected there. But I watched every second of the weekend series that I could, barring any of the TexasTech.tv
technical difficulties.
That was stupid. And then we'll talk about the upcoming series this weekend, your questions if we have any, and what we learned.
Hey, we do have some questions. Matt Wells' headset himself has sent in some questions.
All right, well, let's talk about some basketball first.
Okay.
Here comes Stevenson. Spins. And it is stepped back by the freshman sensation, Smith.
Pass over the top. McCormick and a crowd stripped by Owens. Ready on the run. Bounce pass. Here's Culver.
Evans.
Yes. Game over.
Mooney with a crossover and the lob to Owens.
Now the shot clock is at three. Mooney spins, fires. Oh, he got it to go. Edwards with a three. Good! What a shot, Kyler Edwards. Ready, double, into Tariq. Owens, who puts it down. Already. Odiasi. Crowbars it in. Shot clock down to five. Got the screen. Here's a three. Good!
Culver got the separation. Oh, big shot. Woo! Step it up big time.
That's it. There's a new member of the Final Four Club, and they hail from Lubbock, Texas.
The thing I'm most excited about is that we have a baseball bumper this week.
Oh, man. Yeah, we should have teased that.
I just did.
Oh, that's true.
All right, so...
A live tease just right now.
Red Raiders dropped a road game in Stillwater to the Cowboys. One of the worst teams in the conference.
Yeah, you know, just for those of you keeping up at home, Oklahoma State's 3-10 in the Big 12 now. They've, of course, one of those three is against Tech. So it was a pretty ugly loss. I think I'm going to frame it a little bit because I tend to be the overreactor type person when Tech loses.
Hey, me too.
Well, that's, you know, sometimes that's good for podcast, but I'm going to step away. I'm going to step back from that and just kind of take this in as a slight glitch, tiny bump in the road.
Can we fix the glitch?
And declare that it's nothing to worry about. And I don't think I'm going to make excuses per se, but I do think I will point out that Oklahoma State sure was playing, you know, they were giving Texas Tech the best game that they could. You know, Tech kind of came in with a target on their back, having destroyed them in Lubbock, and then also just creeping back into the rankings again, which they're back out of. They're basically 26th this week after this.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This loss, they were 24th heading into Stillwater. So it's a, I'm going to frame it that way. Just a tiny bump in the road, nothing to worry about, nothing to see here. Kevin Bacon, all is well. Just keep going.
Well, so here's the thing. You had your worst loss of the season in Fort Worth.
Yes.
And then you did this. It may rival worst loss in terms of the opponent. Both games were on the road. Oklahoma State played a pretty complete game. Like, there was not that they beat you in a half. They were intense from the from the tip. They were aggressive. Rebounds. They out rebounded you badly. It was, let me look at the number. That's, why can't I add that? Okay, 37 to 22. So they out rebounded you by 15.
Well, and what was crazy, I mean, they had 15 offensive rebounds. So they just kept getting the ball. They kept getting second chances over and over. Well, 15 times at least. And I remember that just the first few minutes of the game. It seemed like the first three or four possessions.
It was nothing but offensive rebounds for the Cowboys.
They had like four or five offensive rebounds in the first 5 minutes.
And I remember that just the first half in general.
I just thought, this is not going to go well. This may be a bad day for Tech. And it just kind of snowballed into that, where they were really playing well, like you said, and they were playing hard. They were giving Tech the best game they could. I mean, they shot well. They did everything well. They held onto the ball. Let's see. I mean, Tech had 15 turnovers, which is not great, but Oklahoma State only had 16. So that was kind of a, I don't want to say it's a wash, but there wasn't a big disparity there.
It's six blocks against
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
They had two players score 16, Jonathan Laurent and Caleb Boone, who is not a great free throw shooter, but went 12 of 14.
Yeah, he was pretty great on Saturday.
Scored 16 points with only two field goals.
Yeah.
They had four guys play 35 or more minutes. So they had four guys that played everything, and then they rotated out the fifth guy. Davide Moretti played all 40 minutes for you. Kyler Edwards played 39. Jamias Ramsey played 35. You did have four guys in double figures. Moretti had 15. Kevin McCullough had 15. Ramsey had 14. Edwards had 12. Holyfield. I think this is one of those games. Like, this is a, you see this time and again. When he gets in foul trouble early, it is going to be a fist fight. Like, you're going to, like, it's going to be a close game.
Yeah.
Because his defensive presence is certainly missed. I think he picked up, what was it, three fouls in the first 5 minutes of the game. And then he sat the last 15 minutes.
It was very quick.
And then 2 minutes into the second half, he picked up his fourth foul and then sat again for a long time. And he did eventually foul out, but it was later in the game. But he missed. I mean, he played 14 minutes.
Yeah. He was out.
And he's been averaging 25 before this.
22. Well, he was.
It's 23, I think.
Right. Well, he was, I think the way I looked at it last week, his first six or seven Big 12 games was about 22 with three fouls. And then his last four or so were in the, he had 33 minutes or something like that with three fouls. I mean, he was just able to stay out of foul trouble. And obviously, you know, that's pretty easy leap to make. No foul trouble, then you get to play more. So he obviously was not going to be able to play as much on Saturday, popping off three real quick. And,
no.
And you know, a lot of the arguments kind of been made. I'm not the one that's really making. I'm kind of just repeating what other people have said, that as important as Ramsey is to this team, Holyfield may be more important. Because his absence, for whatever reason, I mean, when he's not out there, it's, or when he's not on his game, you know, one or the two, Tech really struggles. Ramsey doesn't struggle a whole lot. He was 5 for 15. I mean, he didn't shoot extremely well by any means, but he still had 14 points.
It was like three of those five were threes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so he was definitely still a productive player. Only two fouls, four assists. I mean, a couple of blocks, a steal. I mean, he was kind of everywhere, like normal.
He did have four turnovers, though.
Yeah. But the it just seems like a lot of Tech's success rides a lot on Holyfield, kind of getting he's kind of that that missing piece that if it's not quite there, then you're really going to struggle to replace what he can provide when he's able to stay on the court.
So losing this game, I think, one, it hurts your chances to win the Big 12. I think that was fairly well set. Baylor's going to have to basically lose the rest of their games to not win the Big 12. So it's not really hurting your 2019-2020 season success. It can affect your seeding going into the tournament. It may affect how much you need to win in the Big 12 tournament. But I think mostly it's just going to serve as another kind of wake-up call. It's like you can't rely on just pure talent to beat a team on the road in the Big 12. You still have a couple of road games left. You've got at Iowa State and at Oklahoma.
Yep.
That are winnable games, even on the road. But as you can't play like you did on Saturday and hope to win either of those games. Like, Iowa State's not very good. They're missing their best player, but they can still beat you if you play like you did on Saturday.
Sure.
You're going to need to play a really good game to beat Oklahoma on the road. You're going to need to be perfect to beat Baylor on the road.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
To end the season, or your last road game. But yeah, so you hope that this kind of serves as a Waco call, like a refresher, like, hey guys, let's not forget, like, we need to play defense. We can't give up all the easy rebounds. We can't be overly aggressive and pick up fouls. I mean, you committed 22 fouls in the game to Oklahoma State's 18. So it's not like you were hacking them, but they shot 27 free throws in the second half.
Yeah.
And they were 23 of 27. They were 85%.
And Tech shot 20 the entire game. So it's like you said, it wasn't a disparity per se in the fouls themselves. It was just how they were being committed, and they just weren't smart fouls. And they were apparently fouling this kid Boone, who could not miss that day. So maybe quit doing that.
Yeah. And I was telling Michael before we started, before Oklahoma State got into the bonus, they were still shooting free throws because you were fouling Oklahoma State shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So they picked up a lot of free throws even before they got into the bonus, which are just obviously easy, free free throws on any foul.
Easy money.
So you dropped that game. You now are at just outside of the rankings. You're 16-9.
Yes.
7-5 in the Big 12. You will host Kansas State. You beat them by a good margin in Manhattan, but it was kind of an ugly, lower scoring game, which is typically how they do. You play them Wednesday night, the 19th at 8 p.m. on ESPN2/ESPNU. You're still, I mean, as Texas Tech at home, you're a pretty significant favorite at home against Kansas State. If you look at Haslametrics, he has you at minus 15. And a projected score 70-55. You just need to come back home, regroup on your home court, take care of business, and get you set to go back on the road on Saturday when you go up to Ames. Again, Haslametrics has you as a 2-3 possession favorite, minus 7, and 75-68 type of projection. The thing that really you need to be careful of, Iowa State is missing their best player.
Yeah.
Tyrese Halliburton is out for the rest of the season.
You said it was a wrist injury?
It's a wrist injury. He led the team in minutes per game at 37, points, rebounds, assists, and steals. The only thing he didn't was blocks. The only thing he didn't lead is blocks.
Yeah.
So obviously he's a significant part of that team. Again, we've seen you can't just roll into an opposing Big 12 venue and sleepwalk your way to a win. Without Halliburton, Iowa State can still beat you. So, Hopefully the game this past weekend against Oklahoma State serves as, like I said, a wake-up call. Has the metrics, and KenPom both have, you know, are still fairly strong, have strong opinions of you. Has the metrics has you at number 11, KenPom at 16. This is after the game in Stillwater, so any drop was not very significant in their rankings. Still set to make some late season, I wouldn't say heroics, but
hijinks
to pick up a few late season wins to get you rolling going into postseason play.
Yeah, I mean you're kind of losing. You're losing ways to boost your resume, at least realistic ways. You know, I don't want to already claim the game in Waco loss before we play it, because obviously that's ridiculous to say. But that's really tough. That's going to be a very tough game for Tech to win, and it's going to be a pretty tough environment. And so between that and Kansas, those are the only real resume boosters you have left for your quadrant one, or you know, whatever the terminology is for the Joey brackets and whatnot. But it's going to be tough for Tech to really improve their stature the rest of the year, and this loss in Stillwater does not help that at all. So Tech needs to, I mean, obviously they've got to win all the games they can, but I think they need to have some statement wins. I think if they're going to let Kansas State hang around and Tech ends up winning by three, then that's not going to really be great at home. And as hard as it is to play on the road in the Big 12, Tech needs a big statement in Ames this weekend to kind of get their name back out there. But I don't really care about a ranking. The ranking's not bothering me that Tech's been drifting in and out, because I think it's deserved. I mean, I think there's some weeks they've played like a top 15 team, and there's some weeks where they've played like a top 30 team. And yeah, it makes sense that they're kind of drifting in and out. And I think they almost do a little bit better. You know, Dan's kind of made this argument too, that they almost do a little bit better when they're kind of more of an underdog, more of a chip on your shoulder kind of thing. So it, obviously the season's still, there's a lot left to play. There's a lot that can happen, but Tech's just running out of ways to improve their hopeful and, you know, probable tournament seeding.
Yeah. Still lots of meaningful and exciting basketball left on the schedule. But I don't know about you guys. I think a game can be 10 times more exciting if you're putting money on it. Sometimes we have gut feelings about a matchup, not always the right ones, but sometimes we're just betting on our team because they're our team. Regardless whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. So if you're going to bet this season, basketball, NBA, all that good stuff, do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag, because no one gives you more ways to win. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code CHAIR to activate the offer. It's promo code CHAIR, C-H-A-I-R, to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So we've got football up next. And I don't really want to play the intro music to football.
This doesn't feel like it
kind of felt weird last week, but I'm going to hold off this week because we're talking about Jet Duffy, and it's not good, and it's not something we need to be super excited about.
Sure.
Especially how Texas Tech, the university, the athletic department is handling it. There was another article that Central Michigan University Life paper, sorry, the Central Michigan University paper, Central Michigan Life.
Correct.
Published. I think it came out Sunday afternoon. And it was basically their response to the initial article they ran a couple weeks ago. And it says, headline is, "The process worked. CMU responds to transfer quarterback Jet Duffy's recruitment. Texas Tech sexual assault complaints. Author Evan Petzold is the guy that wrote the first one.
Right. I don't think I ever mentioned that last week. So good job by you, Evan. I didn't mean to leave your name out.
Yeah. And he and I had a little interaction on Twitter. Because at one point, like deep in the article, kind of buried, I would have been a lot more forthcoming with this little nugget. That here, I'll just read it. See, he says this is like the second or third to last paragraph in his article. The only action taken by the university was recently deleting Duffy's 2019 player profile from its athletics website, thus removing him from last season's roster. Following the publication of this story, as of February 17th, Texas Tech put Duffy, who wore number 7 for the Red Raiders, back on the 2019 roster. So when he got to that part in the article, I flipped over and I pulled it up real quick. And I was like, no, he's on the roster. And he said, you know, he responded like at the time that I wrote it, it wasn't. He actually included a screenshot.
He's got a screenshot up there
in,
now,
the, in the article now that shows the 2019 roster with guys like Armand Shine, like, you know, in that part of the
in the
roster.
Numerical order, yeah, by your jersey number.
Armand Shine, who would not still be here for 2020. Rico Jeffers, who wore 6. Adrian Fry, who wore 7. Maverick McIver, who wore 8.
Yeah, and Duffy wore 7, so he should have been right there. And
he's not listed in that picture.
Not in that shot, no, but I checked just before we recorded, and yeah, he's back on there. So it's
weird, like, why they would take him down.
Yeah.
Or why they would put him back up. Like, if you took him down, that's one thing. It's fine. He left your team and is kind of not, like, I wouldn't say disgraced, but, like, this is not somebody you want to be highlighting or making a connection back to Texas Tech, as this is not a very great story.
Yeah, very.
But why would you put him back on the roster?
It's just a really passive PR move, which I find interesting. And the other thing I found interesting was something that we'd kind of hinted at last week, but to hear someone actually bring it up, the main, you know, the main thing that was the result of this Title IX case against Duffy, where he is alleged to have drugged and raped this woman, who has come out and, you know, publicly talked about what happened. And anyway, it's awful and it's terrible, and that's what we're dealing with here. But the way it was resolved through the Title IX was they had a mediation, and that meant that all parties agreed to participate in a, quote, voluntary resolution. And what struck me as interesting from the Central Michigan article that was just recently posted, they had a quote from Colorado-based attorney John Kloon, who has represented women in sexual assault cases against high-profile athletes, including Kobe, you know, Jameis Winston, Johan Santana. Anyway, here's what he had to say. He said, quote, if a school was motivated to bury something, getting it into mediation is probably the best way to do that. Generally speaking, that's the optimal way for a school to make something go away quietly, to get everyone to sign on the dotted line.
I don't disagree, because there isn't a finding in that kind of case. There's not a responsible, like we saw when
in the first Title IX incident,
Duffy was found responsible for 2 sexual assault allegations, whatever, in the Title IX.
Sure.
Whatever. How you want to phrase that. When it goes to mediation, there is no ruling of responsible or not responsible. And the university and athletic department may be able to shield themselves from having to respond, because it did go through mediation.
Right.
They may be like, well, it's a privacy thing or whatever they want to say, or it's been resolved.
Sure. Yeah. We have the paperwork that says it's been resolved because the two parties signed it.
But again, if you go back and if you take this attorney's opinion, he says if a school was motivated to bury something, get it into mediation is probably the best way to do that. You know when it went to mediation? Days after Bowman was injured.
Right. I wondered, and we're not sure when that was scheduled, though. I mean, because it was reported to Title IX.
Texas Tech could clear that up.
Yeah, they sure could.
But you know, no, like, it was resolved.
The timing of it looks terrible. Who knows? Maybe they wanted to. I don't know, because the victim, she filed the police report in May. The event actually happened in March. She filed the Title IX about 10 days after the event. She filed a police report in May. And so I'm kind of wondering, you know, maybe it's possible that Title IX really got to that point in May and decided, okay, all right, well, if everyone is going to agree to a mediation, it's about to be summer. Let's wait till September until everyone's back, and then we'll have it then. It could have been that.
But school gets back in August.
And you're exactly right. Or it could have been, as sinister as it sounds, like, okay, you know, it's September 12th. We've got like a week. We need to get this thing done because this kid's got to suit up. We got to figure out how to get this done. How do we work this out? We have no way of knowing what the timeline was there or what the thought process was to assign that date.
Yeah, and looking back, it doesn't make sense to kind of protect Duffy in the spring. It makes a lot more sense to try to protect him and push this through in the fall.
Well, and it doesn't make sense that
after Bowman was injured, that like you need a quarterback. Your other option is that Rice transfer, who had played snaps and looked completely lost, and like there is nobody left.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't make sense too that right around the same exact time that in March when all this happened, Wells suspended what, 4 players that same month for quote unquote violating team rules, and I almost know for a fact that one of those rules was one of the players lived with his girlfriend and that wasn't cool. But then this kind of shit's okay. Come on, coach. Do you have is there a difference? I think there is. I would seem to think so.
One is a felony.
Yeah.
And one is goes against somebody's personal standards.
Yeah, I mean, hanging in your locker room is a sign that says treat women with respect. I took a picture of it. It's there. It's there in the media room. I mean, if a grown adult man can't live with a woman, but a guy can allegedly snort coke and allegedly drug a woman and allegedly, you know, everything that, anyway. Sorry. Do you want to get to the better news about football?
Sure. There's some.
It actually is pretty good news.
Yeah. Former assistant coach, former Duke assistant coach Derek Jones has been hired as a new secondary coach at Texas Tech. Jones was at Duke for 8 years.
Yeah, I mean,
which is a long time to be an assistant anywhere.
Well, he was there for over 12. I mean,
okay, so 12.
All but said was, and done.
But he was not like a coordinator. Like he was a long time assistant. And you could tell the kind of relationship and the impact he had on the team with, you know, Duke's head coach David Cutcliffe wrote this letter and then recorded a video about sharing some of his thoughts on Coach Jones. That's not something you do with a coach that's leaving you.
Yeah. And the video was produced. I mean, it was obviously him sharing thoughts and, you know, Derek also sharing thoughts too, but while they were, you know, airing these out and talking about each other and you know, being really happy for one another, and they were playing video highlights in the background, and there was music, and there was, I mean, it was a produced thing from the Duke Athletic Twitter.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, Coach Cutcliffe sat down at his desk with his iPhone and recorded a selfie video. I was like, hey man, thanks for all you've done for us. We're really excited for you. No, this was
very personal. And so it's one of those things that, cause Rob Bro, friend of the show, Rob Bro brought it up. It's, you just don't see this. You don't see someone who's so genuinely happy for their assistant and had worked with them for so long. And then to see them get to move on and make a video and make it, you know, players, I don't know. I think it's a really good sign. He seems like a great guy, and obviously a very committed coach. And man, if he can get Tech secondary in the top 120th in the country, whew, hot dog,
out.
Man.
Watch out.
But really, I mean, that's great. But I think that this is a good hire. It sure does seem like it.
Yeah, so he'll be at Texas Tech as the associate head coach, co-DC, and secondary coach or something. Like, he's got like several layers of title.
Oh, I don't involved. Think I realized that. You know, I think they all look. Do, though, because I know I think Cosgrove did as well. I think he had some couple of assistant to the regional managers thrown in there.
Let's see. Where did I write it? Okay. Yep, he's associate head coach, co-defensive coordinator, and secondary coach, and picks up a $500,000 salary.
Yeah. I mean, that's
which
more...
which is not an assistant coach salary.
Is that not more... or? At least as much as Tech was able to pay David Gibbs
for a while, I think. Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I think he's making the same thing that Tech used to pay our defensive coordinator.
And then, speaking of salary note, Kevin Cosgrove's salary was released via Inside the Red Raiders. I forget their affiliation. It's not Scout. Is it 24/7 Sports? Anyways, he's had to be making $300,000 with Texas Tech this year.
Yeah, and that's just about. Seth did some math on this on the Stake in the Plains on the morning stake for today, the 18th, and he said that the salary pool is up basically about $310,000. So that's good. I mean, anytime that Tech's able to throw more money, you can get some better guys, some more quality guys in, some more experienced guys in. And hopefully compete in all facets of the game instead of just focusing on a couple. But it's just wild to think that, I mean, Yost and Patterson are making $600,000 a year. And so, I mean, Jones coming in just right under that. So it's wild to think that Tech has that many coaches making over $500,000 a year when used to they just had two.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Kingsbury and Gibbs, and that was it.
Just really like a brief summary of looking at the top of this this form for Derek Jones' salary. So he's direct annual compensation is $500,000. Term will run through January 31st of 2022. So he has a two-year contract, which is not unusual. Cell phones provided. He's also given a vehicle allowance.
Hey, all right.
Of $5,000 a year, which is good for $417 a month.
To get you a modest $25,000 vehicle.
Yeah.
If you finance it for 60 months.
But also, like, on top of your $500,000 salary, I'm sure.
Yeah, he'd be all right.
I mean, it's knocking $400 off of your whatever vehicle purchase or lease agreement you've got. Hopefully not with Rager Dykes for your sure. sake, Derek Jones. Hope somebody has oriented you to that to stay away from them.
Who was it? Did Alderson take over that kind of stuff?
I think Alderson has been for a while. I think even going back to Tuberville, it's always been like an Alderson Cadillac.
Yeah, or Mercedes or one of their...
Well, you could, that's true, because Kingsbury seemed to rotate through his vehicles, where it looked like
he might have had a Lexus here and there.
Yeah, too. It looked like Tuberville had an Escalade for a while, and then he had like a CX, whatever the coupe sports car is they do.
I would request like a, if it had to be a Cadillac, I'd request like an 02 Eldorado.
Gosh,
just someone go find me an 02 Eldorado,
and you'll spend more than $5,000 a year on maintenance on that
thing. That's fine. I can deal with it. I loved those cars so much. That Northstar V8 was like a 4.8 liter. It wasn't huge displacement, but man, it was a pretty fast car. I think it was front wheel drive too, which was kind of odd to be such a big car.
It was a Cadillac CTS.
Oh, that's what he had. Okay.
Just fine. You know, it's,
yeah.
It's
give me an old Eldorado before they quit making them.
All right. So you ready to talk about some baseball, some Texas Tech
yes,
baseball?
Yes, because I want to hear this promo.
All right.
Left field, well struck. Nezloni picks it up on a bounce. He's racing for second, throw. taken. Young lifts it to right field, looking for a second home run, and he's got it into his own bullpen.
Reps and some time because all the tools are there.
Wow, this one launched deep left off the bat of Warren and into the bleachers. There he goes, and the pitch is driven high and deep to right. Kerstad to the wall, off the top of the fence. Here comes the big foul. Cameron Warren's going to motor home from first. Throw to third is late, and the Red Raiders have reclaimed the lead.
Popped up. Trevor Boone back. It's more than a pop up. It's a big fly. Tuck takes the lead.
Lubbock and Leavitt. Texas Tech can start packing for Omaha.
All right, so that was a lot of fun to put together. Obviously, majority of that was this past season. One play was not. It was the first play from the 2016 College World Series. The first play where Nesloni threw out Jonathan India from Florida, trying to stretch a single into a double.
Oh, yeah, threw him out at second.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then you've got like the Cameron Warren home run that the dude caught in his beer cup, the Josh Young home run in the Super Regional finale against Oklahoma State, Kurt Wilson's home run against Oklahoma State, Cody Masters' near home run, but you got Cameron Warren scoring from first on the hit and run, which it's funny, like we talked about like how great of a call that was to send Cam Warren on like a hit and run. But had Masters cleared the wall, like nobody would have talked about that.
Right.
Like Masters would have been the hero, not Cam Warren and Tadlock for making that call.
Sure, sure.
And then obviously the Kurt Wilson home run. And then the last one, it was Colin Simpson striking out to send Tech to the College World Series last season. Which is interesting, if you remember, as Tech fans, he struck out as the last batter in the first and third game of that series. So he was the last out, striking out both times that Tech won against Oklahoma State in the Super Regionals. Sucks to suck, dude. All right, opening weekend, you can get the series recap thread over on Staking the Plains. Keith Patrick and Dinger Derby had an episode that came out Monday morning. He was quick to do his recap, but let's quickly go through it. Texas Tech goes 4-0 on the weekend. Not unsurprising, but they start the weekend off a little modestly, a little slowly, at least in terms of, you know, context with the rest of the weekend. They defeat Houston Baptist 5-1. I guess the biggest surprise, well, the first surprise of the weekend is you get Clayton Beter as a starter on Friday night. And he was a guy that we all thought could be competing for a big time relief pitcher role, maybe closer. He comes in and starts a game, throws six innings. Nobody else on the weekend throws more innings than Beter did. And he was a guy that you thought would be a reliever.
Yeah. Even I noticed and thought, man, how is he's still out there? But he's still going.
He was super efficient.
Yes.
In his six innings, he threw 66 pitches.
Yeah,
so he averaged 11 pitches an inning, which is barely over the minimum.
Yeah.
He only gave up two hits, one earned run, six strikeouts, one walk. The presumed starter Friday night, Micah Dallas, came in relief of Beter. He threw three innings, five Ks, no hits, no runs, no walks.
Man was on a mission.
Yeah, he was like, you know, you didn't start me, but like let me prove why I should have been. Texas Tech scores all five of their runs in the bottom of the fifth, so they exploded for runs, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of the weekend because they scored in bunches. Obviously, when you put up 65 runs in four games,
and one of them was only five, only quote unquote.
Yeah, so you scored 60 runs in three games, essentially.
Yeah.
Well, what you did, the two games on Saturday and then Sunday. Your first game Saturday against Houston Baptist, you run rule them 24-3. So it was a game shortened to seven innings. The Vanderbilt transfer, Austin Becker, got the start. Dude was nails. He was like, he was the, this was the kind of start you were expecting from Bryce Bonin, where Bonin built throughout the season. He became one of your best pitchers. Becker started off that way.
Yeah, Bonin took a little bit to kind of acclimate to everything.
So he threw four innings, gave up three hits, one run, four strikeouts, two walks. Keith was there at the game, said he was easily hitting 94, 95 on the radar gun. And then you got a bunch of guys that came in relief of him. Eli Reekman, Brandon Hendricks, Tyler Hamilton, each pitched for an inning to close out that game in seven innings. But this is when you got to see the Nate Romblast show.
or Bomb Blast.
Bomb Blast.
There's also Bomb Blast. I think that's Keith's preference.
Nate Rombeck had seven hits on the weekend. Five were home runs. Of those five, four of them were three-run home runs.
Gosh.
So the other two hits he had, so he was five of his seven hits on the weekend were home runs. The other two were doubles. One of those doubles on Sunday was maybe a foot away from being another three-run home run. Very nearly went six home runs with five four-run home runs. So five three-run home runs.
That's insane.
So on Saturday, on this first game, Rombach had three of his home runs in that Saturday game versus Houston Baptist. Two of them were three-run home runs. Cody Masters had a home run. Jace Young had a home run. Cal Conley, the Miami transfer, had two home runs. And at one point, you went back to back to back. You had three straight batters hit a home run.
Ouch.
So it's no wonder you were able to put Houston Baptist away 24-3. The second game, you did see Northern Colorado play Houston Baptist Friday night. It was a little bit closer game Saturday evening when you took on Northern Colorado. More of the same, where you downed them 22-4. So you score 46 runs on Saturday. Bryce Bonin got the start, went four complete innings, gave up only one hit, one run, eight strikeouts.
Sheesh.
And was hitting 94-95. Ryan Sublette came in, pitched two innings. John Barrera, Riley Ramsey, Kurt Wilson all got some time on the bump. And then more of the offensive home runs. You got Brian Klein hit a solo home run. Jace Young hit a two-run home run. Rombach hit another one of his three-run home runs. And then Cal Conley had an inside-the-park home run.
How fast is this dude?
So I think they were saying he's Marshak fast.
Ooh,
but
that's bold.
He's got bat, too.
Dang.
Where Marshak struggles at the plate, Conley doesn't. It's a deadly combination.
Yeah, that's pretty heartbreaking for the
Conley got
team.
Got a lot of play this weekend at shortstop. Jace Young got a lot of play at third. I actually had a friend say, I thought Young graduated. I was like, no, the Young you saw was his younger brother. That's a true freshman.
This is Young.
He's like, it looked like the same dude. Not like the same dude. The production looked like the same. Obviously, Jace Young bats on he's a left-handed bat. Both played third. And Jace Young, I think, had a much hotter start than Josh Young did. Really excited to see all these young guys like just explode. Now, you know, let's be honest, Houston Baptist and Northern Colorado combined for 30 wins last season, so they're not great teams.
True.
But you did more than just win 5-2 type ball games.
Sure.
I mean, you did that once.
Yeah, that was Friday.
Like, let's open up the bats a little bit.
Well, you know, Friday it was wind chill was in the 20s.
It was a
it's a dreary
stupid
day,
stupid cold day.
Yeah, it was one of those days that had it been in March, I'm willing to think old Tadlock would have called it.
Yeah,
let's not play today.
It maybe if it wasn't opening day.
Yeah, if it wasn't opening day, maybe even if it was Saturday or you know Saturday night. You know what? Let's not play the second one today. Let's just call it. That sounds good.
Yeah, for sure. And then Sunday, you took on Northern Colorado again. They played Houston Baptist first, and then you followed. You beat them. You put up another 14 runs in that game. Mason Montgomery got the start, went four innings, only gave up two hits, two runs, five strikeouts, no walks. Hunter Dobbins came in for a complete inning. Jacob Brustowski came in, his performance was like also one of the highlights of the weekend. He only threw 8 pitches, but he got 2 strikeouts and was pulled after those 2 batters.
My gosh.
So he came in, he got 2 outs on 8 pitches. McMillan comes in after Brustowski to get that last out of the inning, throws 1 pitch.
Yeah.
And then is replaced in the half inning.
And he got the out on that pitch, like you said, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He got
one on that pitch.
1/3 of an inning pitch, which means he recorded an out on 1 pitch. Now, I heard somebody ask, like, why do they wait for McMillan? Like, why do they wait so long to bring him in? I think it's because the coaching staff know what they have in McMillan. They wanted to get him some work because I think everybody pitched this weekend.
Yeah,
or at least very close.
Well, I was about to ask you. I mean, nobody pitched twice, right?
No, and there's no reason to when you have this kind of depth.
I mean, my God, it's staggering. You played 4 games. Tech played 4 games and didn't see any pitcher twice.
Mm-mm. And then Andrew Devine came in to close out the game. This was the other run ruled game because it was a travel day for Northern Colorado getting out of here. And Rombach hit another 3-run home run Sunday afternoon.
Do you say that he had 4 of those?
4 3-run home runs.
So just 4 swings of the bat, and that's 12 RBIs.
Yeah, he had 5 home runs, hit for 500 on the weekend, 2 doubles, 5 home runs, 15 RBIs, 2 walks, 4 hit by pitch. So, like, I believe every time, like, it has to work out. Almost every time Rombach got to the plate, he was on base. His slugging percentage, which is based on, it's valued on number of bases you hit.
Yeah.
That you get to.
I'll let you say what it is.
So 1,000 is usually like the scale, right?
Of course.
But because this is a way to, you get more, you know, more points for a double, and then you get more points for a triple than a double. Anyways, his slugging percentage is 1714.
That doesn't even make sense. There's no way that makes any sense.
Like, his OPS must be like 2,500 or 3,000, whatever. Like, it's got to be, like, it wouldn't be 3,000, but, you know, approaching 2,500 OPS, which is on base plus slugging. Dude, that's a stupid good weekend.
Especially, I mean, for your debut. Hi.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Nate Rombach. So
Nate Rombach here. Good to be here. You know, glad, freshman, first time to play D1 college ball. Sure excited to be here.
Keith says that, you know, it's unlikely he's going to replace Fulford behind the dish as an everyday type of guy. But with these kind of numbers, you can bet that Rombach is probably going to be,
he'll be somewhere,
your DH, your first baseman. He's going to find a spot to stand.
Yeah.
As Talat likes to say, because that bat, you just can't let that sit on the bench.
Find a spot to stand.
Cal Conley, another newcomer, hit .412 on the weekend. So he's 7-17. 1 double, 2 home runs, 3 RBI. Jace Young hit .500. Double, 2 home runs, 13 RBI. These other, like, batting averages were ridiculous. Dylan Noisy hit .571. Drew Baker, who I think probably played in 1 or 2 games, .385. Brian Klein played every game at second base, .500. TJ Rumfield, a guy that you were kind of hoping to hear from last year, he got a little burn this weekend, hit .583. And then of some of your stats, especially your offensive stats, you scored 65 runs. That ranks first in the Big 12. And second in all of college baseball. I want to know who scored more runs in the opening weekend than you did.
Yeah.
You averaged 16.3 runs per game over your 4 games. First in the Big 12, second in college baseball. Your team batting average. So of everybody that went to the plate, your team batting average is .438. First in the Big 12, the first in college baseball. Your team on-base percentage, .565. First in the Big 12, first in college baseball. Team slugging percentage, .792. First in the Big 12, first in Division I. Your ERA, your pitching, as well, as good as they did, the runs they surrendered were earned runs. So your ERA was just over 3. fourth in the Big 12, 100th in college baseball.
Okay.
I see that changing a little bit. Like, it'll trend downwards when you get more innings from your starters.
Well, and they were
more of your solid back end rotational guys that are in there.
Yeah, and like you were kind of alluding to earlier, with McMillan not playing much, you know, they're trying to figure out what they have with the other guys.
Yeah,
and so yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
But on the flip side of that, your WHIP, which is walks plus hits divided by your innings pitched, the lower the number, the better. It was 0.84, and I'm having a hard time describing that. It's like,
I've never heard of WHIP.
So
the WHIP stat.
So you're giving up fewer than one walk and hit combined per inning pitched.
Okay.
So like this is basically how many opposing batters reach base because you walked them or they got a hit.
Okay.
So less than one per inning.
So no gimmies, kind of.
Number two in the Big 12 with that, number 17 in college baseball. Home runs, you hit 12 on the weekend. Number one in the Big 12, number one in D1. And I think you were rewarded, so to speak. You had two rankings come out and rank you as the number one team in the country. Out of the seven or eight, whatever the ones. One was the College Baseball Writers Association, and like the college baseball newspaper or something had you as number one team. D1 baseball named Nate Rombach the National Player of the Week. The Big 12 named Nate Rombach as the Player of the Week and Jace Young as the Newcomer of the Week. So you got two Player of the Week recognitions. After this weekend from the Big 12, you had a lot of people recognizing Rombach, after his introduction to college baseball.
Oh man. Yeah. Splash.
So like I said, your opening weekend competition was not that great. Huge swing upwards in competition this weekend. You go to Round Rock. In the Round Rock Classic at Dell Diamond, where you will face Tennessee Friday night, Stanford Saturday evening, and Houston Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, some quality teams, obviously, you know, big time programs from big conferences. Tennessee and Stanford for sure, but the quality in competition is going to be interesting to see how Tech adjusts to this. I know that some of their last few outings at this same, or this, maybe not this exact same place, but they, you know, they've had the tournament in Frisco and, mm-hmm. You know, where they play three different teams last couple of years, they haven't done well. They've always kind of struggled in those tournaments. And then I think last year was the one, maybe they only played one game. I think weather knocked them out for the other two, but I want to see how this pitching staff does against probably a lot more comparable bats. And if I remember right,
I don't know if you can say comparable.
Oh yeah, that's true.
There's nobody on pace to do what you're doing. Nate Rombach, I think I heard if you're that on pace guy, I think he's on pace for 87 home runs.
Well, and I think Tennessee. I happened to hear Dr. Mike Gustafson on Double T on Friday, I believe, and I think Tennessee has a really good pitcher. So that may be a way to test these young guys that off to an astonishing start as 18-year-old kids out there playing baseball.
Speaking of your starting pitchers, on the weekend, they obviously went 4-0. Their strikeout-to-walk ratio was 23 strikeouts to 3 walks from your starting pitchers, and only allowed, between the four starting pitchers, only allowed 5 runs and 8 hits. So that's like average 2 hits and 1 run and 6 strikeouts to 1 walk. For your starting pitcher. Nate Rombach has the 5 home runs. He's tied for first nationally. 15 RBI has him second nationally. Jace Young hit 13 RBI this weekend. It's good for third nationally. Nate Rombach was also named the National College Baseball Writers Association National Player of the Week. That's also the, one of the organizations that listed you as number one team in the country. The Golden Spikes Award for the performance of the weekend has Nate Rombach as one of their performers. Now, they only pick one game. You know, Nate Rombach's going up against Cale Baker from Ole Miss, who went 4-for-4, 2 runs, 4 RBI, 2 doubles, 2 home runs. Judd Ward of Auburn and Will Dion from McNeese State. The one that they got for Rombach, he was 3-for-4 for 4 runs, 7 RBI, and 3 home runs. Currently, at least in that, you know, in their final results for that, this poll, Rombach got 31% of the votes. Cale Baker got 39%. So the polls, updating the polls, college baseball writers, there's so many. There's two number ones. USA Today has you at number 3. Perfect Game has you number 3. Baseball America has you number 4. D1 Baseball has you at number 6. So, yeah, you had a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, not bad.
And obviously, baseball being one of my sports, I get really excited about. I couldn't have had more fun watching this team this weekend. Run ruling two opponents, putting up 60 runs in 3 games. There was fun to be had.
Yes, now, all around.
I wish I was there for those weekend games. I'm not jealous of those that went on Friday. That looked miserable. Sorry.
It was a test of endurance.
For sure. So if you want to watch the games this weekend, you will need to pick up a FlowLive.tv subscription. And it looks like you can get them from as low as $12.50 a month.
Yeah, I think you can just do it one time. That's what Keith was saying on his podcast today. Because for some reason I had in my head that maybe you had to commit to a minimum amount of months, but I don't think so. I think you just buy 1 month if you want to.
And to clarify a previous clarification on if you need to keep ESPN Plus, you don't need to keep it. You can pick it back up in a couple months. You will have 2 baseball series this year on ESPN Plus. Both of them are road series at Baylor and at Kansas. I think they're close enough that you can probably just get the 1 month to cover both of them.
They're back to back.
Back to back.
It's perfect. Go. Yeah. The Baylor series starts April 17th and the Kansas series finishes April 26th. So
in 9 days, you'll spend the $10.
If you get that ESPN Plus membership at about 6:29 p.m. on the 17th of April, you'll be good to go.
Yeah. Obviously, if you want more baseball news, you'll need to follow Keith Patrick at the Dinger Derby podcast. Anywhere you listen to your podcasts, on Twitter, Dinger_Derby, Instagram, TTU_DingerDerby. He's got that opening weekend recap and a preview of the upcoming weekend tournament in Round Rock. Last thing on baseball is we had our first T-ball practice tonight.
Sporting your Tigers hat.
I am.
I don't see the Hawaiian shirt, though. Little disappointed. You didn't show up in a Ferrari either, but, you know.
It was too cold. It was pretty cold. Our practice lasted 45 minutes. That's not
what Magnum wouldn't have. No. It's never too cold for Magnum P.I.
But you know who my favorite Detroit Tiger was?
Who? I'm not going to know who it is, but go ahead and say it.
Oh, gosh. I can't believe I set that up and I blanked on his name.
It's Tom Selleck.
No. Okay, when I think about this, I'll just blurt it out.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. All right, so we had our first practice. And really what it was, because it was cold and it was our first practice, I wanted just to get active and have them run around for a little bit. I was trying to teach them the bases. I was like, you know, like, what are these? These are bases. Okay, here's home plate. This is where you score runs. This is where you bat from. Here's first base. You run to first from home. Here's second base. Here's third base. And then I had him run the bases. Okay, when you get to first base, stop and yell, first base. Get to second base. Trying to teach them because they're 4 and 5 years old.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
They're young kids. There's not much practicing going on tonight.
It's learning the rules, basically.
Kind of. And then I was saying, okay, when you're not batting, like if the other team is batting, we'll be standing out in the field. And the person that stands here at first base is called the first baseman. Like, it's easy. First base. There's second baseman. There's a third baseman.
Good philosophy. It's all built around the bases.
There's a tricky one between second and third called the shortstop. In the middle, there's the pitcher at home plate. They're like, he's the home. He's like, no, he's the catcher.
Like, sorry, guys, that would be the logical.
He's the home baseman. No, that's
no, no, no. There's not a home baseman. That makes too much sense.
But as trying to teach baseball to 4 and 5 year olds, it's like, you know what? And it's not my idea, but I was like, you know, it's a great idea. Let's play kickball. Because it's an easy, non-threatening ball.
Yeah.
That you can throw around, you can kick, you can get the motion of, okay, here comes the pitch, there's a batter. The play is, you know, you got to throw it to first. There's a lot less threat of injury throwing a kickball than a baseball. After 45 minutes of practice tonight, I'm not excited about our prospects. We have a player that he played. We have a couple players that have played last year. One player's really fast. He's like, I think I know where I want to play him. I think I want him to be the pitcher who's going to be kind of chasing all the stuff down. The hand-eye, foot-eye coordination was not good.
Even with the kickball?
Even with the giant kickball. There were some people that were like swinging and missing. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be... At least in our modified T-ball league, they get to hit off the tee. After they miss 3 pitched balls, but we're going to be working a lot of individual small groups in batting, so maybe they'll get a lot more practice at it.
Yeah, and then run to first base,
and then on defense, I'm basically like split the field in half. If it's going to the pitcher, second baseman, or first baseman, the play is get the ball to first. So if it's on the right side of the infield, the play's at first. If the runner makes it to first safely, our next attention is on the next batter. We're gonna stop. Like we're gonna stop them from running any further than the second or third. But then our focus is gonna be on the next batter getting them out at first.
Yeah.
If the ball goes to the left side of the infield, it's get the ball back to the pitcher and stop the play.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's how the rules work with this.
Yeah.
The pitcher has the ball. Everyone has to stop at their base, right?
The last one they touch, unless they're forced ahead.
Oh, even the last one they touch?
Last one they safely touch. So if they're a step away from reaching home and the pitcher stops the play, the runner has to go back to third.
Mm. Okay.
Because one, they wanted to avoid the, well, was he more than halfway? Like the judgment of like, would he have scored?
No. There's no judgment. It's just a flat out nope.
Just go back to the last base. Yep. You legally touched unless you're forced to the next one.
Gotcha.
So my plan is to, like I said, basically split the baseball diamond in half to start the season and say, anything on this side, play goes to first. Anything over here, the ball goes back to the pitcher.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you chasing people down at third, trying to make a tag out at home. I don't want you going to second, because if you throw it to second and miss, it's going in the outfield. Everybody's going to score.
Yeah.
Like you, nobody should be throwing to second base. We'll see. And then, like I said, I want to get a lot of one-on-one, like not one-on-one, but a lot of attention into batting and get a lot of people more practice than we got last year. We'll see, though.
Seems like a good plan.
I had a couple parents, and I don't know if it, like, I'm excited that they offered to help. I'm also like, could you tell already in one practice that like I needed help? Which is fine, because I only had the 2 coaches, me and this other coach. And she was more like, I should have given more direction. I learned.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Story of my life as a trying to manage people.
Yeah,
I should have given more direction. I could say that probably at least once an hour, huh? I should have given more direction on that.
So yeah,
they didn't read my mind. That's crazy. Why didn't they read my mind?
I don't know. But that was our first practice. It may be too cold to practice outside Thursday. One of the coaches on the team is the, like, I don't know if I told you this, but she's the PE teacher at the elementary school. So it's like, hey, you're used to working with kids this age and in an athletic capacity. Like I can work with this. She's offered up for us to use the gym on days that it's too cold to practice. Like, well, that's great, but I don't, like, I guess we could play kickball again. We could try it again. Keep working on that. Cause there's not, like, you can't throw baseballs in the gym and I don't think we're there yet. We can do tennis balls, but again, I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah. What about hitting?
I do have a net that they could hit into that would stop the ball. So they, like, we could do that. We could break it up and do,
but then you'd really have to break it up. Cause there's,
well, like the way we did it tonight is we had, you know, a third baseman, a shortstop, a second baseman, a first baseman, a pitcher. And then everybody else was either in line to kick or on the bases. Cause they just kicked. Like they really only ran one base. So I could take a smaller group, you know, two or three at a time or one at a time and actually have them bat off the tee and then have the rest of them work on kickball and kind of rotate that way, which I may do that.
Look at you. Look at you, coach. Got some thoughts over there, man.
And the other coaches kind of reinforce what we were trying to do tonight playing kickball. And I give some individual or whoever, you know, if somebody is better at teaching batting, to let them do that. I don't, you know, envision myself having to do, like, I have to be the batting coach and I have to be the sure. other coach that pitches. I'm awful. So if one of the other parents that have volunteered can make that throw from the pitching mound to the batter more reliably than I can, please,
go right
please
ahead.
Be our pitching coach.
Yeah.
And I will be a base coach and I will be aggressive as heck and send runners.
Send them all the time.
The problem is obviously that runner at second who's the furthest away from any of your coaches. The pitching coach can't give any direction once the ball's been hit. So
okay.
if I'm the pitching coach and I pitch the ball and the batter hits it from me, I basically have to get out of the way and do nothing else besides just stay out of the way. The other two coaches at first and third can give direction and coach, but they obviously you can't touch the kid.
Sure.
Like you can't like push them out.
Nudge.
Go. You have to like scream at them, Grayson, run home. So yeah, that the runner on second is always the one that like gets dazed and
kind of out there in no man's land.
Butterflies and not paying attention.
Yeah.
Cause the runner at first, you can be like, you can be in their ear the whole time. Okay. You ready to go? You ready to go? Go, go, go.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you can just,
at second you'd be like
quietly talk
run!
To them. Yeah. Cause you don't want to scream across the thing the whole game too. Hey, second kid on second base.
You're running as soon as they hit the ball.
If he hits the ball that, yeah, you don't want to. But like, I do what now? Okay, if he hit.
And also, like, once you get to second, you need to be looking at the third base coach. And that, yeah, they need to. Anyways, little league update. That's where we're at. this will be like our going yard section until the spring grass starts to grow, which I thought was going to be soon. But every week when it freezes, like, no, we're gonna delay that just a little bit longer. But yeah, I'm. As long as there's not like snow and ice, I'm probably leaning towards having practice on Thursday night now that I've thought this through. So. Okay. Michael, are you ready for questions?
I am ready.
And you said we did have some.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this.
Now, are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Who's in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right, so questions. You mentioned Matt Wells headset. I'm sorry. I'm realizing this. Like, I'm still not over the throat issues that I've had since I had the flu 6 weeks ago. The longer we go into the podcast, the less voice I have, the more effort I'm having to exert to have a normal voice.
You also just coached baseball tonight too.
Well, there wasn't a lot of yelling though. Like,
well, still, but I'm sure you had to just talk more.
There's more talking, but like,
yeah.
if I don't give effort, then like the more froggy and the voice gets like, yeah. And I'm sure it's annoying to listen to that. So I'm gonna apologize, but I did not think I'd still be dealing with my a weak voice 6 weeks after having the flu and all the crap I had going on with my throat back then. And I'll still get like a sore throat every now and then. It's strange.
It's just unforgiving this season.
No, Matt Wells headset. My reaction is that some Tech fans are being a bunch of Nancys about the loss, talking about the basketball loss to Oklahoma State. Baseball team looks good though. Tadlock ought to have a summer home in Omaha by now. You know, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
It's like a vacation home, a timeshare. Like I'll be there June and July. Just, you guys got to get out the rest of the year.
Yeah. You know, a little bit of money invested in Omaha Steaks.
All right. So his questions, he actually submitted questions. He had the reaction and then questions. My questions are as follows. One, give you a 7 seed right now. Do you take it or roll the dice? I do not like the 7 seed in the basketball tournament.
You would roll the dice?
I think I would. Even if that means
I think I would take it.
Taking a 10, which you would still play the 7. That's 7, 8, 9, 10, like in that range, which you're pretty close to probably going to have one of those.
I think I'd rather have 7 than 8 or 9.
Well, because here's the thing. If you're 7 or 10 and you win, then you get the 2 seed the next round.
Yeah.
If you're 8 or 9, you get the 1 seed the next round.
But it's going to be harder to win that 8 or 9, possibly.
Right. So I think I'd rather, if not the 7, then I want the 10.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I don't want the 8 or 9, and well, I don't want to have to play the 1 seed.
You can be the underdog, too.
And I don't think a Power 5 team can fall to like an 11.
Not typically, no. Unless they're a team that won their tournament or something and they're awful.
But see, I wouldn't mind an 11 seed. And take on like the number 3 seed in your bracket, which you were last season.
Yeah.
That's when you played Buffalo.
No.
I think they were the 11. No. They were the 6.
Yeah, Buffalo's who you played the second game. You played one of the Kentucky schools, Northern Kentucky.
But they would have been 14.
Is that right?
So Buffalo beat the... Okay, because if you're the 11 seed, your first game is against the 6 seed. And last year, Buffalo, as a 6 seed, won that game.
Yes.
And then you played them.
Correct.
But if Texas Tech is the 11 seed and they win their first game versus the 6 seed, then you'd play the 3 seed, which is where I think I was going. It's not as easy a path as I was expecting.
I think I would take the... I would... You know, as I mentioned before, the... You know, we're not going overboard. There's no, don't dump water out the boat. We're not sinking or anything. But I think I would take the 7 seed right now because, as I mentioned, I don't really see how Tech's going to boost their resume much more than where they're at right now.
You'd have
with
to
the games
beat
that are left,
Kansas and or Baylor to do it.
And then you'd also have to.
You probably need to win.
Beat the crap out of. Like Kansas State and Iowa State and
Texas
and
Oklahoma.
OU. I mean, you would have to... I mean, UT, you could probably get by with a squeaker at home, but I mean, I don't think you can do that against Kansas State.
Ramsey, one and done.
Possibly. As we kind of dove into that a little bit on the Slack chat, if Zaire Smith is... As great as he was, Ramsey's stats are way better. Way better in almost every category. If you're just looking at straight up stats. So yeah, I mean there's a very good chance of that. He may be one and done. I'm to the point now where I'm going to be surprised if he's not. And he keeps going up these draft boards. He's a talented player. I think he's more put together than Zaire was at this age. I think he's not quite as raw as Zaire was.
I think he's on the bubble of being a one and done. I think he probably could go and be drafted this year regardless, but I think if he continues to perform well and if the team makes a deep run this spring, he can improve his draft stock and like really go to a good team and set himself up.
The other argument with that is that next year, supposedly the draft's going to be really stacked,
which would encourage him to go now.
Right.
But if he doesn't, he could play with, if he stays, he could play with Micah Peavy
and Tomboy,
Joel and Tomboy, Namari Burnett. Like, next year's team, talent-wise, is going to be off the charts. You still hypothetically have a shot within Tom Boy's younger brother, who may be reclassifying to this upcoming recruiting class. In his recruiting class, he's the number one recruit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep.
And he could reclassify and join, like, and be on a college roster this fall. Like I said, hypothetically, you still have that shot since you have his brother on your roster. And then Tyreek Smith is the other player that you have now that we would hypothetically get back. Because the thing that's been pointed out is those scholarship numbers don't work out. I think currently, right now, even without Burnett's, without Ntombwe's younger brother, you're plus one. So there's one player on your team now that would not be returning in a scholarship capacity.
Benson.
Well, not, no, I
Benson's on Scully.
I think it was including seniors, like how many scholarships will be open after the seniors leave, minus the new guys coming in. I think you're still one over.
Okay.
And well, I think it was because Benson got added on. You're like, well, now what?
I mean, there's been scholarship players transfer.
Yeah,
like, and Malik transferred, Moore transferred. I mean, there's been some guys transfer out of Beard's system, whether, and he's, I'm not sure, I'm just seemed kind of amicable, you know, that both sides, they saw they weren't going to play, or Beard just flat out told them they weren't going to, or whatever it was. So there's, he may be able to free up some scholarship spots and just kind of talk someone into heading somewhere else and try to find him a good place to go.
And how that worked last year, it was a guy that redshirted, didn't play. And you look at the redshirt guys this year, Tyreek Smith and Joel and Thomas, like, I don't want either one of you to leave.
That's a good point.
We need the size and the offensive presence that they can provide, as also being, you know, nearly 6'8", 6'9", guys. So, yeah. I mean, it would definitely favor him if the draft is going to be that loaded for Ramsey to go ahead and kind of move on now. Also could help with the scholarship numbers. Question number three, why would anybody drink diet soda? Here's the thing. I really like the carbonation, and I really like a sweet drink, and I really like the caffeine. But if I'm drinking like a full sugar soda, like where I could be drinking 2, 3, 4 of these a day, that's like 500-600 extra calories
in
just a beverage.
Yeah.
Like I will acknowledge that I'm addicted to soda, and I justify it by like, okay, well, you know, at least it's diet soda. I'm probably giving myself cancer with aspartame and all the other crappy, you know, fake sugars I use, but at least it's not, you know, real sugars and real carbs that I'm just ingesting at my desk.
Yeah. We drink, for a lot of our broadcasts, whoever's coming over to whoever's house will text the other and, hey, you know, you want a soda or anything. And it's almost always a diet version of something. And that's the only, my only thought process behind it too, is I just don't want the calories. Cause we're not
all skinny like you, Matt Wells had said.
Yeah. I mean,
and whoever's behind
you're
this,
obviously a svelte, you know, a nice AT&T slim, you know, possibly a Bose, you know, Bose has a nice figure. But yeah, I don't really want the extra calories, but lately, man, this is such an old man thing, but carbonated anything has just really started to upset my stomach. Cause Spencer's asked me the last several times, hey, do you want a beverage? And I've said no for the last several times, but I never actually told him why until now.
And you like, when you say no, I don't go to get my own.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, okay, fine. I won't get it.
No, I just say no because, because I don't know what it is. Because I really was into those Spindrifts and stuff and the flavored sparkling waters. And then I would drink one for lunch, and then my stomach would just turn upside amongst itself the rest of half the afternoon at work. And I finally figured out, I think that's what it is. So I've kind of laid off that too. Such a old man thing to have to deal with.
Yeah. I do notice, like, on the days I have a sore throat, a soda makes it 10 times worse, which is, it's interesting.
But, well, I saw someone reply to this Eric on Wheels said that he drinks diet soda because he likes carbonation and it tastes better than the regular drink. That I do not agree with.
Well, here's,
diet soda does not taste better. It tastes, it's acceptable.
Different. It's different. It's not like, it's not the same drink.
No, it is not the same.
But here's the thing.
None of them taste like the other.
Having shifted to drinking diet sodas for as long as I have now, for like a couple years.
Me too.
Like, drinking a regular soda is like,
it's work.
A punch in the mouth.
It takes.
It is so dang sweet. You're like, I can't do this.
Well, it's not just the sweetness. It's the, I'm full. I'm full now. I can't do anything. I need to go lay down because I had a soda. I had a sugary soda.
I like to make the joke with Samantha, like, she gets on to me for how much soda I drink. I was like, well, it's diet soda. It's like, that doesn't matter. It's like, it's basically water. Okay.
Yeah, really.
Especially when it's like when I,
it's chemically
I pick
water.
Up like a caffeine free diet soda. I was like, this is water. Okay. Don't at me, bro.
No, it's cool.
But yeah, then Matt Wells headset replies with that Greta gif. How dare you? Brian Bradley replied and said, you take the 7 seed all day at this point. Wells headset says, calls him a pink raider. We'll be a 1 seed by the time Beard starts wearing a headset. And then Brian Cooper at local nerd LBK says, he responds to all 4 of these questions. 1, yes, if you get to the Final 4, you'll need to go through tough teams anyways. He's talking about taking the 7 seed. 2, I feel he's out after this year. Talking about Ramsey. 3, 0 calories, plus some diabetics can't take so much sugar.
Ah, I didn't think about that.
And the 4th question that we haven't answered yet. Better Lubbock breakfast spot, Pancake House or Breakfast House? I'm going to have to look at you because I don't think I've been to either.
Lubbock Breakfast House.
Is that the one at University in the Loop?
Yes, and they have a second location on 19th and University. It's just next to IHOP, oddly enough.
Yeah, I've been to neither. I like Cast Iron Grill, one on 19th and like basically the highway.
Basically I-27, yeah.
I like Picante's off 34th, little Mexican place. They do a fantastic breakfast, Burrito Tower, Tech Cafe, Slide.
Rain Cafe is probably my favorite. I think Rain Cafe would be my favorite breakfast place in town. Not Rain Uptown, even though they serve kind of pretty much the same stuff, but just Rain Cafe, because it's got the old school, you've kind of got a mix match of the white coffee mugs.
Mm.
Allison may not get the same coffee mug I do, but they're both white. And there's always someone running. I mean, you've got like half of your coffee drink and you look over and it's full again. And
splash. You're like, I have to guess how much creamer and sugar to put
They
in
make
there.
French toast and they batter it, of course. Because that's what you do with French toast. And on the outside of the French toast, they add, I believe it's cornflakes.
What?
So you get like that nice kind of just slight crunch with your French toast. Phenomenal.
Mm.
Rain is my favorite breakfast place. But between Pancake House and Lubbock Breakfast House, hands down. There's just too many people that go there. I don't go there anymore. It's just too popular. Every time I drive by there, there's people outside waiting to put their name in for the table. Maybe not even have their name on yet. But yeah, if you want more,
you have to know somebody that's eating there.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to take your table.
But Rain though, man, Rain's still, you know, it gets busy because it is good, but it's not quite on that level. So I would suggest that.
Okay. Let's get to what do we learn?
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right, so one of the things I just learned. Baylor basketball did win tonight versus Oklahoma. So now they've won 23 straight games.
Ooh.
Now, the best in the Big 12 in terms of winning streak in Big 12 history, having just surpassed the 96-97 Kansas Jayhawks.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough game in Waco, you think?
Yeah, for sure. I didn't see this coming, and I don't pay a lot of attention to other conference schools outside of like Kansas and West Virginia, and only thinking like, oh, they're usually some of our more difficult opponents. Baylor was good last year, but not like this.
Yeah,
and it's not like they picked up like they turned their roster over with a bunch more talent. Like, these are guys that have been there and have been developing.
Credit to, there were quite a few outlets and polls and stuff that saw this pretty early, and I just couldn't. I thought, man, how are they ranked so high? So,
and what? I disagreed. I was like, what is, no, that's dumb.
Oh yeah, well, and you know, look who ended up being on the right side of that. But
yeah, they're 24-1.
Unreal. And that one was it their first game or their second game?
I think it was their second. I think they won a game, then lost one, and then
they've rattled off 23 straight.
Gosh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's not bad.
All right, what did you learn?
What did I learn? Okay, last week I briefly mentioned what I thought was a Florida sausage company that my mother-in-law had sent us 12 individually wrapped
1 pound
packages of sausage.
I'm on the website and looking at it now.
And it's
assortment pack.
It's, and y'all know how good I am at butchering names, so I'm going to butcher this one too. It's spelled C-O-N-E-C-U-H. Konica. I'm sure she told me how to pronounce it, and I can't remember it. And it's not in Florida. It's in Alabama. So I had all sorts of stuff wrong last week, but I told you guys I would tell you where it was. So check out their website if you want to. KonecaSausage.com, C-O-N-E-C-U-H, sausage.com. And guys, it's phenomenal. It just tastes like someone went outside to... They're you know how they build those smoke shacks where it's just meat hanging. It's like someone just pulled one of those off and threw it in a skillet and handed it to you. It's so smoky, it's wonderful. It's just great.
Yeah, they're so this pack, this assortment pack, their flavors are hickory smoked, spicy and hot, all natural hickory smoked. I don't know how that's different than hickory smoked.
Me neither.
Original Cajun cracked black pepper.
And that is the pack that we have. And we're just kind of working our way through it. Allison's been tasked with, okay, what's the sausage dish going to be this week? We're trying to like just slowly but surely work through all that because it's in the freezer. And it's, anyway, that's been awesome. And I learned one other thing. Spencer, have you ever heard of competitive jigsaw puzzling?
Not ever once in my life.
It is a thing and it is surprisingly fun. My wife's pretty into puzzling. And we went to the first ever competitive jigsaw puzzling contest held at the Science Spectrum this Saturday.
How does one compete?
It's pretty official. They have you have teams of two or teams of four, and then there's a team with a family where you can have like up to four adults and a kid or however you want to do it. So we obviously did a team of two. They come out with this was a 300-piece puzzle, and everyone,
too bad.
Everyone gets the exact same 300-piece puzzle, of course. Well, at least the teams of two did, and teams of four, I think, were working on a different puzzle, and so all the teams of two, same exact puzzle. It's in a brown paper bag. It's wrapped. It's sealed. All they have done is make a little slit in the plastic that covers a puzzle box. So, I mean, it's never been opened even. So you have no idea what it looks like. And then they tell you when to start and you wrap you take everything out and you dump all the pieces out. And then, you flag someone over when you get close and then they record your official time and all that kind of stuff. So we did it in 58 minutes, which got us fifth place out of about eight. We were in the bottom half. First place
58 minutes for 300 pieces. That's not bad.
See, that seems pretty good, but then you hear the other times. First place were a couple of sisters that knocked it out in 35 minutes. And then second place were a couple of people they drove in from Sweetwater over 100 miles. And once because they asked at the beginning, where did you come from? They did like a kind of a little interactive quiz. And almost everybody, they were 0 to 25 miles away, and one group was 100+ miles away. And the guy's like, "Who's that?" "Eh, it's us, and we're from Sweetwater." And so Allison and I were both like, oh man, they're going to be serious. And sure enough, they got second place, 39 minutes. So it was fun, man. I mean, we had a good time, and you get to keep the puzzle, and it was free, and there was no, but the top three places got, there was a little jigsaw puzzle trophy for each member of the two person team, which I thought was neat. And then I think first place also got some sort of Chick-fil-A gift card. So it was,
that's where it's at, man.
Yeah. So, it was pretty good turnout, and they were kind of talking about maybe, you know, starting it a little bit more often. And
Michael, would you be interested in competing against my wife and I in a competitive jigsaw?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, really what we should do is probably put our wives on a team, and then
you and I on a team.
Yeah. And then we could split the winnings. Because if our wives were on a team, they would probably win. I think I'm almost certain I was the anchor. I was dragging her down. There was one section of the puzzle I just kind of sat there for a while because it was all this blue, and it all looked the same. And I just sat there like, I don't know what to do now. I've done all I can do.
The thing that I figured out when Samantha and I are doing puzzles together is she's the one that like does most of them, and then she'll get stuck on like one piece. I'm just like, I got it.
It's this one.
And she's like, how did you, I've been looking for that piece for like 5 minutes. I was like, I don't know, I just saw it.
It's been
right there.
It's been in the whole time.
I just picked it up, put it in.
Don't want to tell you.
Yeah. Anyway,
it was a lot of fun, man. I'll tell y'all when the next one comes through.
Yeah, well, we'll have to check that out. I feel like there's something else I was gonna say, but if there's music coming in, I guess not.
Well, it's hard to top competitive jigsaw puzzling.
There's no topping that. So for Michael, I'm Spencer. Thanks again for listening to the 23 Personal Podcast. We will catch you guys next week. Peace.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast and sharing our fandom for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. You can connect with us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Puntsuck, and Michael at Michael_LBK, and find even more great content over on stakingtheplains.com. Help us out by rating the show and leaving a review on iTunes and subscribe on whatever channel you listen to podcasts. Remember to tell your friends about the show. The guys will be back next week with another episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.